Welcome to Between the Lines, where we explore the rich tapestry of the Bible's teachings and revelations with your hosts, David and Jonathan. Thanks for joining us on WVFF 97.7 FM as we seek to understand the deeper meanings behind the verses and discover the love of Christ and hope of his salvation. Without further ado, our hosts, David and Jonathan.
All right. Here with Between the Lines, Understanding the Bible with David and Jonathan, third installment of Genesis. We're in chapter 13. Just give you a little, you know what? I don't have a fancy degree. God put it in me a long time ago, and for 3 years, I read 30 chapters a day. And I never missed a day, and I read this book over 100 times through in its entirety, and other passages hundreds of times. Doesn't mean I know it inside and out, but I've seen a lot of things that you don't just see when you read it. And until I read it 1,000 times through, I wouldn't say that I knew it in any qualifying factor. But I just want to impart to you some of the things that God showed me when he put it in my heart to read his book. And it's, you know, I grew up a Pentecostal. And when I was bound by the law. One day I'm going to hell, one day I'm going to heaven. And when I read his book, I got so angry because I'd been lied to by men that read passages out of this book and had no understanding of them. And I found freedom and liberty and beauty. And I found out that God, this entire book tells you to get your heart right. And it's an overlapping theme about the heart. You'll see it as we go, that the binding law turns into the law of the heart, turns into the love of the heart in Jesus Christ. It's a beautiful thing. So we've gone through creation. We just got out of the flood, and we've just established Abram, and he went to Egypt because of famine. He's told one of his many deceptive, I don't like to call them lies, because it's deception. There's a spiritual war going on even now in Abram's time, and God even tells people in this book to be deceptive. He will command them to tell what you would say is a lie, but it's deception. I think it was Winston Churchill said, during war, deception is the greatest truth. And you got to remember, it's a war going on, because when I found some of these things in here, I said, oh my gosh, how can God be doing that? But there was reason, and it was all righteous. And we're gonna continue here, chapter 13. And like I said, Abram went to Egypt. He told his wife Sarai, don't tell them you're my wife, because they'll kill me, because you're so beautiful. I know they'll kill me, so tell them you're my sister, which was a half-truth, because it was his half-sister. And then Pharaoh, realizing that it is his wife, through some supernatural, catch version installment number two, through some supernatural antics by some angelic hosts, finds out the hard way, the black eye and a bruised up nose, that that is his wife, and thou shalt not touch her. He gives Pharaoh a whole bunch of gifts. I mean, he gives Abram a whole bunch of gifts, and he sends him on his way, and the greatest gift was his daughter. And that's not right there in black and white. You got to do some other reading in some other texts, Book of Jubilees, Book of Jasher. And we find her later, Hagar. You remember the Sarah at the time. Sarai is going to be called Sarah later. Has a bondmaid, an Egyptian bondmaid. Well, that was Pharaoh's daughter, and Pharaoh took his daughter. And after discovering this man and this God that he serves, he says, "Go with Hagar. Go with this man. It's better for you to be a servant in his household than it is to be a princess in mine." and he sends them on their way. So chapter 13, and Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south. And Abram was a very rich in cattle and in silver and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them. Too many cattle, too many camels. There wasn't enough land for them both to be together.
Imagine that, as many as there would be like a herd of locusts, more or less. What I'm seeing in my mind is...
Yeah. There was not, the land could not bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abram's cattle and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Pezite dwelled in the land. Perizzite dwelt in the land. And Abram said to Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdsmen and thy herdsmen. We be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. If thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes, and behold, all the plain of Jordan, that was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. And Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. So Abram and Lot go their separate ways with goodwill, just to separate their tribes and their animals, so there's enough grazing room for everybody. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent towards Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward, and eastward and westward, for all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. Remember that God said, I will give it to thy seed forever, and I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land, in the length of it, and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. And Abram removed his tent, and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. All right, if you're just joining us, this is WBFF 97.7. You're here with Between the Lines, Understanding the Bible with David and Jonathan. Chapter 14 of Genesis. And it came to pass in the day of Amraphel, king of Sinar, Arioch, king of Elisar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that these kings made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admar, and Shemember, king of Zebulun, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar. The most terrifying part about this book is the names in the Old Testament.
Yes.
I've been in the pulpit, and it just scares you to death. Because you know the names are coming on the next page.
Yeah, the Rubik's Cube for the tongue.
All these were joined together in the Vale of Sidon, which is the Salt Sea. So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 kings against 2. Or was it 1? Bera, king of Sodom, and against 2. Shemer, king of Adam, and Shember, king of... No, it was 5 against 5. So it was an equal. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer, and in the 13th year they rebelled. And in the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him, and smote The Riphims. Riphims.
Riphims.
There's a lot to be said about those, and we'll talk about those later as the Jews begin to inhabit Canaan. In Ashtaroth, Carnium, and it's said in this Bible, Riphims cannot be resurrected as a special type of human being. We'll discuss that at a later time. Ashtaroth, Carnium, and Zooms and Ham, and the Emims in Seab, Hirathium, and the Horites in the Mount Seir unto Eliphan, which is by the wilderness. And they returned and came to Enmispat, which is Kadesh, and smote all the country of the Amalekites, and also the Amorites that dwell in Hazazortamar. And there went out the king of Sodom, and the king of Gomorrah, and the king of Admar, and the king of Zeboiim, and the king of Bela, and the same is Zoar, and they joined battle with them in the vale of Siddim. Now, you always hear about Sodom and Gomorrah, but there's some other smaller cities right there with them, and that's these mentioned here. And when we get to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, we're going to talk a little bit more about them. With Chedorlaomer, the king of Elam, and with Tidal, king of nations, and Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Elasar, four kings with five. Four kings against five. And the Vale of Siddim was full of slime pits. The area had a lot of pits, and I've often wondered, you know, what the slime was, but
right.
Some sort of wet, slimy stuff that you didn't want to fall into because they got stuck when you fell in there.
All I can think is a Monty Python movie, for some reason, when we're to go out to the field and
stuff. I mean, could it be like the tar pits in California?
That's kind of.
And the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and fell there, and they that remained fled to the mountain. And they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their victuals and went their way. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. And there came one that had escaped and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, and the Amorite, brother of Eshcol and brother of Asner, and these were confederate with Abram. Now, interesting thing to look there. Sodom and Gomorrah are sacked. All their people are carried off. So Sodom and Gomorrah was not this evil place in the time that Lot went there. It's these new people that moved into the cities made it what God would eventually call an abomination.
Did he just show us both that at the same time?
Yes,
because that's literally what just unfolded in my head. I was like, yep. Wow, so the only... But yeah, right before that, I was like, so the only people who were left over were the people that were done pillaging and stuff like that, and they built a city society after that.
That's exactly right, and you always think, why would Lot move to that place? Why would he move to Sodom?
Right.
But Sodom wasn't that place. And there came one that had escaped and told Abram the Hebrew. This is the first word, the first time Abram is called a Hebrew in the Bible. The word has never been from Genesis 1. Up to Genesis 14, that word did not exist, and all of a sudden, it does now. For he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, and the Amorite brother of Eshcol, and the brother of Aner, and these were confederate with Abram. And when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants. Now, this is, you got to look at every word in this Bible, because one word or one little phrase changes everything. I'm going to just read through it, then I'm going to back up. He armed his trained servants born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. Okay, that just tells me that he armed 318 people of his tribe. No, it tells a whole lot more. Of his tribe, there are many, many bloodlines. He has adopted people. He's brought people in. He picked up people in... when he was down in Egypt.
Right.
But the Bible specifically says, born in his own house of his own blood.
Yes, sir. Hebrew.
Hebrew blood. Because the Hebrew was not an ordinary creature. When the Hebrew followed God, when the Hebrew's heart was correct, the Hebrew was a powerful creature. And you go, if you go into the book of Jasher and the book of Jubilees, you will see some of the exploits of the Hebrews and why everyone feared the Hebrews so badly, even though their numbers weren't that big at this time. But oh my gosh, Abram's people are over there. No, we don't want to mess with them.
Yeah, one Hebrew could set a whole city to flight.
Yes. God had made them in a special way. And it goes back to what we said about Noah. When he was born, his father was afraid of him. Appeared to be as a son of God and grew up to be a powerful creature. So he armed 318 of his own bloodline and pursued five kings and their armies. So we have 318 pursuing thousands. And he divided himself against them, he and his servants, by night, and smote them and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. Now, these five kings had just wiped out four other armies. So, I mean, these are men of war. Pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus, and he brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods, and the women also, and the people. You know, that was one of the biggest spoils they went after. It wasn't just the gold.
Yeah.
We're going to go get us some women.
Look at them.
Get your sword. We're going to go get us some women. You know, dating was so easy back then.
Just go out and pick one out. Like, literally.
If you could use a sword, you could have a woman.
Yes. Or several.
Or several, yeah, that's right. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of Chedorlaomer, and of the kings that were with him at the valley of Save, which is the king's dale. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. Interesting individual, this Melchizedek.
This is one of the, to me, this is, that line right there is like one of the most important lines of the whole Old Tanakh, or the Old Testament.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. I mean,
because of who it's pointing out to be.
Exactly. Yeah, we were going to go into that.
Right.
All right. We've just established for the first time that Abram is a Hebrew. And all of a sudden, and Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. This was the priest of the God that Abraham had recently found and worshipped. Out of nowhere, these two unite for a specific reason. And he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth." There was the reason right there. And he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abram of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand." And he gave him tithes of all. When Moses wrote the first five books, he wrote what God instilled in him to write. His understanding of Melchizedek was limited. He knew him as what he says here: king of Salem, priest of the Most High God. All right. I want you to turn with me to Hebrews chapter 7 and verse number 2. I'll give you a second. Paul knows, because of his meeting the man himself on the road, knows who this man is.
Yes, sir.
Because he has already been touched by him. So we're going to Hebrews chapter 7. Verse 2, it says, "To whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being by interpretation king of righteousness," with a capital, or a specific thing in the King James Version. The capitalization refers to God in some fashion or another, whether it be Lord, King, capital G for large G, because mm-hmm. there are many gods listed in this Bible, but right. only the God of heaven has the capital. So
even his angels in here.
And angels, right. that's correct, with a capital A is referring to a Godhead authority, not actually an angel. So to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, first being interpretation king, capital king of righteousness, and after that also king of Salem, again capital, which is king of peace, capital, without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abideth a priest continually.
Stay tuned as we continue our journey through the scriptures on Between the Lines, Understanding the Bible. We'll be right back with more insightful discussions and exploration.